This is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Voskan. We thank you for downloading or picking up a CD copy of this audio broadcast. Here, Father Voskan provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, to disenfranchise members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week free of charge, either as a podcast at epostle.net, Apple iTunes Store, Blueberry, and now on Stitcher Radio. Our commitment at epostle.net is to provide a medium for apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Nah, get that band out of here. Hey, this is Father Voskan, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, episode number 261 of The Next Step, a podcast about life and love, about spirituality, about looking at your life and the very fabric of it through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy. Polished up for today. We call that polished look Armadoxy, and we're inviting you to take a look with us, take a step with us. This is part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes mission, and brought to you, well, as the lady said, by the cool folks at epostle.net. Hey, if you're ready, I know I am. Let's take the next step. Okay, you gotta know that I really love this stuff, all right? Because I've been at a meeting all morning with the bishop, sat 2 hours talking about strategy, about the Armenian Church. And now I'm coming here, sitting in front of a microphone, ready to share with you some thoughts about the Armenian Church. You gotta admit it, I do love this stuff. And I think I was thinking about that through the meeting. I know I shouldn't be thinking about these things, but it's like so true. It's like you sit through meetings, but when it's exciting conversation, when it's stimulating, when it's getting you to push yourself. That's the key, right? When it gets you to push yourself, when it's exciting. And I guess the church is. You want to hear me say it? Yes, the church is exciting. Well, first of all, let me welcome you to this episode of Next Step. Because what we do here, and whether you're a next stepper or you're just coming on board, it's important to reiterate this every so often, especially right now, because I've been thinking about we're going to be celebrating our 5th anniversary. We're starting our 6th year of broadcasting. It gives us a chance to, you know, it's a point in on the calendar. It gives you a chance to look back and see what you've done and actually think about where you're headed. And what we do here on The Next Step is really kind of break apart issues in life, but we look at it, when I say through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy, you've got to realize that this is the most ancient understanding of Christianity in the world. Okay? The Armenian Church, what you're getting is the purest. Now you say, well, okay, you're biased because you're Armenian. Okay, that's an ethnic call, and you're entitled to call me on that, okay? But I want to share with you why it's so important, because I know we have so many non-Armenian listeners out there, and I want to keep you there, because there's something really beautiful about this. Think of it in this way, okay? After Jesus' ascension, he commissions the disciples, and they go out and they become the apostles, right? The ones who are sent. They go to all kinds of different countries and they preach the gospel. The ones that ended up in Armenia is this landlocked area. Okay, they didn't have too many people coming through, except the ones that came through for barbarism. They came through, they raped and pillaged the land, and they tried to take over. But the Armenians somehow, this is what's the interesting thing, somehow, against all the odds, were able to keep this very pure understanding of Christianity. And the understanding was very simple. It's that there is a power in love. Because when you think about it strategically, when you look at it politically, you go and talk to political analysts on this, Armenia, this small little landlocked country, excuse me. No, I haven't been drinking after the meeting with the bishop. No, my tongue does some funny things every so often. But when you think about it, this little landlocked nation is out there. It doesn't have any military power. No military strategy. And yet everyone who's come through has been able to kill, pillage, rape, the land, the people, but they haven't been able to kill the spirit. Mm-hmm. It's a spirit that William Saroyan spoke about. He says, go ahead, you try to destroy them, and wherever two Armenians get together, they will build a new Armenia. Okay, now, aside from the romantic idea about that, do you think that there's maybe something beyond that? Do you think that there's some power bigger than that? That's at play? And if so, can we tap into that power? Can you bring yourself to tap into that power so that when you need that extra little push in life, when you need to be assured that in the end you will win, if you play the game by love, by truth, by goodness, if you keep that purity in your heart, if you get that assurance, well then, why not? It's not really connected to ethnicity, is it? It's really connected to something very beautiful that we can look at this ethnic group out there and you see, hey, it worked for them. It can work for me. And that's all I'm saying over here, okay? The Armenian Orthodoxy part, yeah, the ethnic part. And I'm bringing this up because later on I'm going to share with you some ideas about some of the ethnic stuff that's going on and some of the trappings that is bringing us down. But as a prelude to today's show, I just wanted to share with you that I am one of those crazy ones that really likes to talk about the church and really make it live. And this is where I want to start off with, because last Friday I did a wedding service. Now, here in Glendale, California, I have to add that part into it, okay? Glendale, California is a unique place for Armenian weddings, okay? It's kind of like, you know, all kinds of things happen. It's not unusual to be sitting at a wedding service and just seeing half of the population arrive in Learjets and the other part showing up in these Hummer, what are they? Like limos, stretch limos out of a Hummer, you know, or it's wild. It gets wild. But anyway, this last Friday, I had a wedding, and I shouldn't preface it with all that, because this was a good unexpected event. All of a sudden, a bishop arrived. Okay, now a bishop arrives at the wedding that you're supposed to be doing, and he arrives, and he is not in our jurisdiction, so technically it's a matter of getting mission, but then at some point you realize that, okay, the guy's a bishop and he's going to pull it off, you know, and there's these ranks and things like that. So he arrives, he's from Beirut, from the House of Cilicia. This is like one of the jurisdictions of the Armenian church. So he arrives at the wedding service and he's going to do it. Now, all the dynamics that are going on, the bride hasn't eaten for 2 or 3 days for various reasons, which shouldn't concern us, but they do. And it is kind of hot. So all of a sudden, the bride starts, wobbling. Now, what's really neat about the Armenian church ceremony, the Armenian church wedding ceremony, is during the ceremony, the bride and groom are locked together at the foreheads and with their hands, okay? Now think about this. Do this visual right now with me, okay? The two foreheads are brought together and they hold each other's hands. So if you're about to faint and if your height is the same as the groom's, you can kind of get away with it by leaning on him. Well, this is what's happening all of a sudden. Here's the bride wobbling around and leaning on the groom. So it was kind of, there's dynamics over there. But it did prompt me to at least tell the bishop, hey, something's going on over there. And, of course, now he's officiating at this service. So I ran out and I got a couple chairs and I put them in front of the altar. So now the bride and groom are sitting. So he turns to me and he says, "Well, read the epistle at this time." And I said, "Sure, you know." And so I'm ready to read from Corinthians chapter 13. Because in my prayer book for the wedding service, that's the one that I have over there. You know, love is kind, love is patient. I mean, what better... Think about it. What better passage is there? What better exhortation is there to give at a wedding than St. Paul's thesis on love? If I speak in the language of men, and if I have all faith to remove mountains, but if I have no love, I am nothing. I'm a clanging cymbal. Ah, that is beautiful. So Bishop looks over at me and he says, "No, I don't want that one read." It makes sense, right? Yeah, it's about love. Let's not read that one. So there's a passage that is traditionally read at the wedding services. It comes from St. Paul's letter to the Ephesians. So here's a good one, okay? Now, I want to share this with you because it kind of lends into what I'm about to talk about. It's a bigger story than just this wedding story, but I got a chance to read it once again. It says, "Wives, submit yourself to your husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church, and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish." Okay, now, I know there's dynamics here. Let me just preface what I'm about to say, because I don't want to get into dynamics. I've already spoken about this in the past. Wives, submit yourselves, you know, and be obedient to the husband and all that. That's a condition that St. Paul puts on. This is first century Palestine. A lot of dynamics in the area, but tell me the truth. Here in the United States of America, 1920. That's in the 20th century was when women were allowed to vote. Allowed to vote, okay? So this is like 2,000-year-old scripture. But that's not to diminish the fact that it talks about a relationship between the husband and the wife. And in this relationship, there is also a condition that's put upon the husband. It says, "Husbands, love your wives even as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it." What? Husbands, you have an obligation not to just kick back and send out orders and tell the wife, "Do this, do that." No, love your wives. How? How are you supposed to love them? The way Christ loved the church. Well, how did he love the church? He died for it. He gave everything. Every single bit he gave to the church. Now, I'm reading this that day. And of course, one of the reasons why I don't usually read this in wedding services is because people take such a superficial understanding of this. Instead of putting it in context, it's like, "Oh, what? Obedience?" But that's not the point here. Listen to this. It's the relationship of a husband and a wife. And St. Paul goes ahead and he establishes this relationship between a husband and a wife, and he likens it to Christ and the church, and also gives that as the example for the husband and the wife. So now think about this for a moment. The church is the bride of Christ. The church is the bride of Christ. Christ and the church, you and me, we are in a relationship with Christ. Now, take that to its extremes. Should you have an expectation from your husband? Absolutely. Should your husband have an expectation from you? Absolutely. What is that expectation? It's an expectation built on love, of caring, of compassion, of, ready for this, fulfillment. Fulfillment, so that each of you come together and one fulfills the other. Think about Christ and the church, right? Christ, you can have this concept of Christ. He's something up in the clouds. He's something in your heart. You can have it on pages of a Bible. But unless you put it together with the church, you don't have the mechanism to do the work of Christ. So Christ is dependent on the church as much as, well, the church is dependent on Christ. If you don't have a head, if you don't have somebody who's going to give you the philosophy to give you the way to look at life, understand what your movements are about, then it's basically useless movements. You're going through motions. So there is this interdependence, which we sometimes like to call symbiosis. That these two entities are in dependence of one another. The egg white and the egg yolk. Okay? They're together inside the shell. In a symbiotic relationship with one another. Right? One is dependent on the other. Okay, now you think about this. Okay, here we are, the church. The church of Christ. Don't you have an obligation to Christ? Absolutely. And as I was reading this, I thought, where is our church at right now? What are we? Are we really the church that we could be a proud bride in front of Christ? Pride in the sense, a proud bride in the sense that we wouldn't be ashamed. Because in many times, I think that our church is so beautiful. It's like the husband who takes the bride home and says, this is the most beautiful woman in the world. She's just gorgeous. Look at her. And then when he takes her home, he tries to have a conversation. He tries to share a thought. And there's nothing underneath the beauty. Many times I think that's where we're at as a church. I think that we have all the trappings. And this commentary is about not only the Armenian church, it's about orthodoxy, it's about some of the mainstream churches. There's a lot of beauty in the church. It's so beautiful. But it has to have a purpose. It's like the guy getting on a bridge, right? And he gets on the bridge to get to the other side, but once he gets on that bridge, he looks up and he says, this is the most gorgeous, beautiful bridge that I've ever seen. He sees the suspension spans. He sees from one side to the other. But he's stuck in that beauty and he says, this is too beautiful. I don't want to get off this bridge. And I think this is what happens to us. Especially in some of the more traditional communions. Especially within Orthodoxy. A lot of trappings. It's just a beautiful bridge. But you don't realize that that bridge has a function. It's to connect you from one side to the other side. And the church has its function. It is the functionary of Christ. It is the legs. It is the hand. It is the heart. It's the muscles of Christ. And for Christ to do his work, he needs to be in the symbiotic relationship with the church. One dependent on the other. The egg white and the egg yolk. Inside of a shell called the universe. And so it's a challenge for us. If we're really the church, if you want to understand Christianity, if you want to understand who Jesus Christ was, if you want to understand him unlike anyone else can understand him, you go and you find his soulmate. Got it? You want to understand Jesus Christ, you go to the source. And the source is his bride. The source is his bride, the one that gave life. The one that allowed him to work. And allows him to work here in this world. Now, it's a tough one. I know it's a tough one. And it goes against everything we've learned. It goes against every model that we have here in the West. But the Eastern idea of mystery, of being in union with Christ, the Eastern idea of communion, the Holy Eucharist, is about taking Christ within. And that symbiotic relationship is accented by the physical. And so when you get to the Divine Liturgy or the Holy Eucharist, it is complete symbiosis. One dependent on the other. These were thoughts that I had at the end of a wedding service that had a fainting bride, that had an unexpected bishop, but it also gave me, it had an unexpected twist in it, because it gave me some new fuel for the fire. Because I think that Christ's church is the most beautiful church there is. It is the most beautiful bride there is. I just don't want Christ to wake up one day and say, "What is this? All beauty on the outside. What's on the inside?" And you know, that's where we go with Armodoxy, within issues. Let me take a break right now. We do a song of the day every week. I've picked out one of my parishioners. His name is Sarkis Kazarian. Just a beautiful pianist. And he has a composition that appeared on a small little CD he put out a few years ago. And it is one of my favorites. I happened to listen to it the other day. And I said, I've got to share this with our listeners. It is by Rachmaninoff. It is Prelude in C sharp minor. The performer, Sarkis Kazarian. Sarkis Kazarian is the artist. That is off of a small CD he made a couple years ago called Live Performances. And I've seen him perform. This guy, he puts passion into his playing. I hope you enjoyed it. He's got a few YouTube clips. I'll make sure that there's a link on our show notes today. I shared with you earlier that there's going to be an ethnic component to this, okay? to today's podcast, and that's about being Armenian. And it's okay if I talk about being Armenian, since I am Armenian, right? Have you ever noticed, like, comedians, okay? It's like no problem, you know, an African-American guy could get up and he could talk about African-Americans. A Latino guy could talk about Latinos. Armenian could talk about Armenians without being called prejudice, without being called some kind of... Well, some kind of racist or anything, because actually it's about your own people. But, you know, in all honesty, right, there is some racism in all of it, right? Because you're separating people. And it's okay, because you're separating around some common, some common realities in many cases. Particularly in what I'm going to share with you today. And that's, you know, you come here to learn about Armenodoxy, and I share with you this ancient tradition of Armenian Orthodoxy, but it is blended with the ethnic, no question about it. And there is some ethnic realities that you can't escape. And one of them came to mind last night when it was like around 11, 12 at midnight. I received an email from one of my former parishioners. I could say in the past 15 years since I've known her, I've received a handful of emails from her. They're usually forwards, as was this one. And so here I am, I'm reading what she sent me, and, you know, it's about what's going on in Turkey and this horrible situation that's existing over there, political unrest, and within, like, an internal strife. And you're wondering, why am I getting this? Well, it's obvious. Some Armenian has spotted difficulties taking place in Turkey and is forwarding it like, look, hey, take a look. Look how bad it is over there. And, you know, it occurred to me, I sit here and I share with you about Armenian Orthodoxy, about this rich, beautiful tradition of the ancient Christianity. And I have to give equal access to the other side of it, because there is, well, there's some deep-seated, for lack of a better word, a really better word, it's deep-seated hatred that there is towards neighbors, namely between the Armenians and the Turks. Okay, I mean, let's not ignore the elephant sitting in the middle of the room. There is. And this is pretty deep. I see it many times. You know, when you think about Armenians and Turks, you think politically, you think in terms of history. But for the common guy, I mean, the common guy on the street, you have to really ask yourself for how much of your parents' crimes or your grandparents' crimes are you liable for? Well, you know, let's break it down a little bit, okay? You steal something from somebody, you are liable for that, right? You have to return that. Your children, do they have to return it? Well, if it's property, maybe. If it's something greater. How about your grandchildren? How far along does that go? And certainly, there is a lot of stuff going on between Armenians and Turks. And this was interesting because late last night I get this email and it's basically saying, look at how lousy the Turks are. And I'm sharing this with you because what you're seeing is I'm sharing this with you in the context of Armenodoxy, because, you know, I've talked about a lot of times about forgiveness and the ultimate challenge that Christ invites us to forgive 7 times 77, in other words, countless. Don't be scared to forgive. And many times, many times, in fact, last Friday night at that wedding, I shared with you the story of the archbishop who was with me. At the reception afterwards, he saw the bracelet on my hand, the small little rubber bracelet that says 7 times 77, and he asked me a question about it. And certainly that question is always followed up with, what are you talking about? How could you forgive issues of genocide? How could you forgive? And it's very legitimate. Yeah, how can you forgive issues of genocide? Okay, we could talk about genocide 100 years ago. Okay, it was the crimes against our fathers, our grandfathers, our great-grandfathers. But what about right now? Genocide happening right now. And obviously, Jesus did not talk about these mass atrocities. Or did he? Last month, when we found out some guy had imprisoned 3 women in his house for 10 years, what do? You get out and you say, you're forgiven. Well, forgiveness also implies that they walk away from the crime unpunished. Well, these are modern ways. These are Western ways of thinking, cause and effect ways of thinking. But now I'm challenging you to really think in terms of how Christ invites us to the idea of forgiveness. The forgiveness is for what? It's so that you can move forward in your life. Seriously, think about it for a moment. When we come down to the issue of genocide, but people think that, okay, by forgiving, you're forgetting. It means that by forgiving, you're allowing that person to walk away. No. It doesn't mean that. Forgiveness allows you to walk away. It allows you to move forward from it. But the crime has still happened. And here's the easiest way to think about it. Here's the easiest way you can think about it. Think of Jesus on the cross. It's there that we see his act of forgiveness. What does he say from the cross? He says, Father, forgive them. They do not know what they are doing. He's up on the cross. Now, did anybody ask him for forgiveness? No. No one's asked him for forgiveness, and yet he forgives. And in that act of forgiveness, is there any forgetting? Well, no. 2,000 years later, what are we doing? We're remembering that more than if he had not said it, right? Think about that for a moment. We are remembering that event because he forgave. We are remembering. We are celebrating that event, the event of forgiveness, of conquering the evil with the good. You got to think about that. Now, we have this woman sending me this text, sending me this email late at night about, look at the Turks. Well, it goes beyond that. This week, Pope Francis was visited by a group of Armenians. And this group of Armenians, headed by one of the Catholicos's or patriarchs, they have some such they have some such name to them. It's like I think it's a combination of the Catholicos and patriarch, and it is for the Catholic community. The Armenian Catholic communities that fall under Rome. So they go and they visit Pope Francis. And this visit and the words of Pope Francis make the headlines of all of the Armenian newspapers. They make the Armenian news that basically Pope Francis has acknowledged the Armenian genocide. And again, what is it doing? Because we haven't forgiven, because we haven't allowed ourselves to move forward, this now is like the greatest news out there. Okay? One more person has said yes to the genocide. As if that one voice is going to make a difference to the reality. Politically, I don't know what it does. It perhaps prevents us from seeing the reality out there. Do you remember a couple months ago, if you're Armenian, this would have caught in your attention, Adam Schiff, representative, House of Representatives, United States, Adam Schiff made a speech, a 5-minute speech in the Armenian language. Okay, in the Armenian language, he stands up in front of the chambers and he recites a speech in Armenian about the Armenian genocide. And Armenians throughout the world applauded it. Yes, yes, he's speaking Armenian. To me, it was just one step backwards. I mean, it was one less voice that is talking about the genocide right now. Because who's understanding that? It was just an empty talk. You look out in the chambers, nobody's understanding it. It's written in Armenian. Okay, there's a translation. It was cool, but it was one less voice. It's like President Obama getting up and talking about the Armenian genocide, but refusing to call it a genocide, and then he calls it Mez Yeren, the great atrocity. The great atrocity. And Armenians applaud it because Obama said these words and because he spoke it in Armenian. And when you think about it, it's just one less voice that's really talking about the reality out there. The reality of genocide. And so in many senses, by being trapped in the past, we can't deal with the reality of today. Now, what is that reality of today? Basically, genocide happening. And genocide means a systematic annihilation of people. And think about it in these terms, okay? And I'm going to be a little bit poetic with it because this is really hurting me. And I think that I hope you Next Step listeners will understand the reason for the poetry here. When we talk about genocide, it means not just killing of people. It's a systematic plan of the government to annihilate a group of people. Okay, it's not a war. It's a mandate given by the government. And we see it right now happening in Darfur. Actually, we're seeing it right now happening on the streets. For instance, within the Armenian community. Okay, within the Armenian community. Here, in Los Angeles, we have an unusual amount of... we have an epidemic, okay? I'm not going to hold back. We have an epidemic of violence against Armenian women. We have an epidemic by their husbands, namely domestic violence. We have a epidemic of young children being lost to drugs, to abuse, to alcoholism. And these kids are just falling away. And they're becoming statistic, epidemic numbers that you can't believe. And instead, we see, and you'll see, this is the part that hurts me. You see it in Armenian newspapers. You know, the Catholicos, Aram, is applauding Pope Francis for his recognition of the genocide. That's great. That's great that he recognized it. But come on, folks. Anybody with intelligence recognizes the genocide of 1915. What we need to do is start recognizing what's going on in the world today. There's issues that if you want to look beyond, you could see in Syria happening right now. You could see in the Middle East. You could see in your own country, in your own backyard. And one of the problems of not coming to terms with the past, and listen to this really carefully, it's not others that have to come to terms with the past. You have to come with the terms with your own past. When you do, it frees you, and it frees you and allows you to move forward with your own life, seeing the new dimensions, seeing the new issues that are in your life, the issues that are pressing. I'm very emotional about this because I'm working with kids now. I'm working with, in fact, this Sunday, we're going to have a special get-together for foster parenting. It's at epidemic proportions. But I needed to share this with you. And I know many of you listening right now could maybe are separated from the issues because of ethnicity. But let me make it a blanket statement. When Christ talks about forgiveness, it's about forgiving and moving forward. It's not about forgetting, but it's about moving forward in life. And it is so essential in the life of a Christian. And I am convinced that that one of the foundations of Armodoxy, the reason why Armenians were able to move forward, was because in the past there was this basic understanding of leaving it to God, that judgment, and moving forward with life. We're going to take a break right now. Here's Anush with today's pomegranate seeds. I'll be back for some parting comments right after her. Here's Anush.
What's hair got to do with it? I'll let you in on something personal. Ready? I struggle with my appearance, and I have struggled with it my whole life. As a kid, a teen, a young woman, a mom, and even now. This past week, it really got the best of me, and I'm not too happy with myself. So I thought I'd go public and tell you about it. The truth about me is that I am never happy with my appearance or myself. Can you relate? My insecurity is something that I'm trying to work on, and I've been really giving it a lot of thought. Last week I wrote about how those who get me, and those who don't, don't. But I'm feeling somewhat hypocritical this week because some days I don't get me. In my head, I know that I'm being super critical and stupid. So here's what happened this week. After about a year of trying to grow out my hair, I decided on Saturday that I was ready for a change and that I would cut my hair short. Now, if you know me, you know that these kinds of life-altering decisions are always done spur of the moment and without any planning. So off I went to my friend's salon. I showed her a photo of what I was thinking would work with my hair. She agreed, and the next thing you knew, I was sitting in the chair and my hair was laying in piles on the floor. And as my hair, the hair on my head, dried and started curling up, I realized that it was way shorter than I had hoped, and that's when the big freakout started happening. I started feeling like an old lady. Now, I'm not talking about our meds mighties who twisted their long hair into a bun that was secured with pins at the nape of their necks. But the ones that cut their hair short because it's easier to take care of, the helmet heads, you know the ones with the purple cotton candy hair. Okay, so the truth of the matter is that I did get it cut so it would be easier to deal with. Does this make me old? Yes? Okay, not quite old, but I'm getting there, but slowly, okay? But once it was cut and on the floor, it sunk in. There is nothing I can do when my hair is too short except wait for it to grow out. But I can mope and obsess and worry. I think it all kind of hit me on Sunday morning when I was getting ready for church. Just out of the shower, I had to deal with my new do and learn what to do with it. I actually started dreading going to church because I didn't want to deal with people's reactions and comments and stares. And this bothered me because I love going to church. During the reading of the confession, it all fit in. It's not only about self-esteem issues with me, there are other issues that go hand in hand with the self-esteem, like pride, envy, vanity, selfishness, to name a few. Okay, pride, envy, vanity, those go together and are pretty obvious in this case, but what about selfishness? I don't think of myself as a selfish person, at least I hope I'm not, yet think about this. Doesn't it seem silly to think that people have nothing better to do than to care about how my hair looks? It does, right? Looking at it in this way, it totally does. The idea that someone else would or should care about something so inconsequential makes me seem that I've put myself in a position where people should care. Like I've elevated myself into something important. That's selfish and self-absorbed. Sheesh. Is being introspective about this another way to bash myself further? I try to teach tolerance to people around me, yet am I tolerant of myself? I love others. Do I love myself enough to accept me as I am, as a creation of God? Here's the truth. In reality, I am blessed with wonderful family and friends that love me. If my hair were long, buzzed, blue, pink, and believe me, it has been those things, they would still love me. They did back then, they still love me now. And of course, God loves me. So it's time to put the negativity aside and accept myself as I am. There's always room to work on change, and that's good. But not when those negative feelings start making you less than you're meant to be. So, what do you think? I know you're out there. Can any of you relate? Do you have similar issues? And are you dealing with them now, or how did you deal with it? I would love to hear from you. In the meantime, go easy on yourselves. Have a great week and a pomegranate day filled with hope and ripe with possibilities.
Sheesh. I like that. Sheesh. What is that? Hey, that is Anush reading one of her entries from Inside the Pomegranate. She writes a blog, and we invite you to check out the entire blog. It's, we'll have it on our show notes today. That is a reading. She does an audio blog once a week with us here on The Next Step. We're so grateful for that. So I hope you enjoyed it. And like she says, chime in with your comments, with your opinions, because we, not just her, we all know you're out there. Sheesh! Hey, listen, here's Susie to tell you how you could get involved with all of us over here at EWASM.
Hi, this is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the fifth year of production and growing daily with new listeners around the globe. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we must avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at epostle.net. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Okay, let me add to Susie's comments right now. But first, we get rid of the pianist, okay? Did you hear that brass section at the beginning of our show? Got rid of them. The lutist after. Yes, that's a classy way of saying the guitarist. For that little Bach little scenario during Anush's pomegranate seeds. And now it's just us. So we're going to just talk plainly. We are completing 5 years of broadcasting. Next week will be the end of our fifth year of broadcasting. We'll be celebrating our fifth anniversary, and then we start our sixth year. It's all been made possible through you. Through your, I cannot emphasize how important your prayers are. So many of you write in and you just share your prayers. You say that we're in your prayers. And those prayers are what continues, what gets us going. There's a beautiful church that is at the bottom of this. It's the St. Peter Youth Ministry Center here in Glendale. There is the In His Shoes Mission. There's Epostle. There is now a new dimension to that, which is the Dativ Outreach. Sort of like an experiment in the works. And all of this comes together because, you know, I truly feel it is God ordained. When I look out there, and I shared with you some of my inner thoughts earlier in today's podcast, that the church has to be the true bride of Christ. We have to be worthy of that. So when Christ looks over, doesn't just see this beautiful creature out there, but looks deep within and sees something of substance, sees something that is talking to the times, that is talking to the lives of the people. And Epostle becomes the voice, becomes a way of doing that apostolic evangelism in this electronic world. Got to thank God that we have the means right now. We have the ability. Just today, Susie shared with me a new product that's on the market. We're going to get it. It takes money, but you know what? Thank God it's coming in. We're going to be spending it on things like that. You're going to see some now new videos coming out of this new product. I'll share it with you next week. Let's make sure that it works first. But hopefully, we're going to get a chance to test drive it this Sunday. I want to share this with you, too. This Sunday, we're going to have a very special prayer service for all of our graduates. Now, we're going to be doing this in Glendale. We are going to be streaming it. It will also be on our YouTube channel, and I want you to share this with your graduates, okay? There'll be a special message for the graduates, and there'll be a special blessing and prayer for the graduates. I want you to take that. It'll be available if it takes place Sunday here. We're in Pacific time, so I know most of the world, most of our listeners have finished their Sunday, actually. I've gotten through their Sunday by the time we reach it. But definitely, why don't you say Monday morning, do check our YouTube channel, and there will be a video. Do check it out. It's important because it is a unique blessing. It is a blessing of the Armenian Church, Armenian Orthodoxy upon graduates. Hey, listen. Everyone graduates at some point, whether it's kindergarten, elementary school, junior high, high school, college, or the graduation from life. And you know what it means. It doesn't mean that you've stopped learning. It just means you've started. Your eyes have opened now, and you see all the beauty around you, and you say, I want more. So much God has given me. Thank God that I have this opportunity to absorb, to learn, to become a better person. That's what we're all about over here. And it's really easy. It's just basically taking the words of Christ. That's Armenodoxy, okay? It's the Armenian Orthodoxy. Taking the words of Christ in the apostolic manner and using the technology that we have today to disseminate it. Apostolic evangelism for an expanding and electronic universe. And I do believe it is electronic. It's all around you. So with that, I'm going to end right now. We had some other stuff we were going to talk about, but we'll save it for our show next week. I'm hoping that our friend Harry is going to chime in. I know he was at the enthronement of the patriarch in Jerusalem. That's kind of exciting stuff happening, and I hope that we'll hear from him soon. And we'll have a little segment about that as well on the next step. But until next week, I want to invite you to get involved with us. We are on the net at epostle.net. You'll find today's show, as well as all the shows we've done since the beginning of time. We're on Facebook at Epostle, at St. Peter Armenian Church, Glendale. We're at Facebook at In His Shoes, and especially Sunsash. Sunsash.blogspot.com. We're on Facebook. Now, Sunsash is for once a day to keep you on, to sash up your life, to give some sunshine to your life every day. You check it out. So, with that, let me invite you back next week for the wonderful crew from the wonderful crew that put today's show together. For Susie, our producer, for Anish with her pomegranate seeds, for Vahe, our webman, this is Father Boston, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
We trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week. And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.